Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is the A-team of free speech. Because we're black, we've got mohawks, and we pity the fool. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the fundage, mail a check or money order to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Okay, today is Monday. We've got with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. We certainly are the A-team of free speech. I really like that, actually. I always like your intros, but this one was a particularly good intro. I like that. And there is a lot to discuss today. There's a lot of free speech to be had. Because I've got to say, there's been some very interesting things happening over the last, well, week since I last spoke to you. I don't know where to start, but maybe the best place to start would be Trump. Because last week, a lot of the news was dominated about the arrest of Donald Trump, which was meant to be taking place Tuesday. But Tuesday came and went. There was no arrest of Donald Trump. Everyone was then like, oh, they've moved it a day back. It's all been moved a day back. And it's all going to happen on the Wednesday. And the Wednesday came and went. And I was sat waiting for all this to happen, thinking, well, I've got a show on Wednesday, a two-hour show. I've got three guests coming on. We're going to be the first show to do a two-hour special on Trump's arrest. It'll happen, you know, on Wednesday morning in the States, which means by, you know, just around 2 p.m. Your time, I'll be doing this really hot take on Trump's arrest, and everyone will be tuning in. This is going to be wonderful. And then it never happened. And I was a little bit taken aback. Now, I think I said, actually, on your show, that it was your show where I spoke about it first. I was slightly concerned about the Trump arrest, not because I thought Trump was going to get arrested, but I did float the idea that maybe, just maybe, Trump had made some of this up. Trump had, told everyone he was getting arrested, not because he was getting arrested, because he wanted a little bit of a publicity boost. And he's been out of the media for a while, and, you know, I'm not saying he's playing second fiddle to Ron DeSantis, but Ron DeSantis has certainly gained ground on Trump. At one point, it looked as if, you know, Trump running for president was almost a foregone conclusion. But then DeSantis seemed to sort of come out of nowhere. And as he came out of nowhere, Trump has sort of, I'm not going to say eaten his dust, but has been in his wake for a short amount of time. However, this talk of Trump's impending arrest seemed to catapult Trump back into the mainstream media. Everyone was talking about him. Twitter was not that I'm on Twitter anymore, but I do log in every now and again to see what's trending. Twitter was absolutely abuzz with Trump is going to be arrested. Some people, celebrating, but plenty of people saying, oh, well, if he gets arrested, I'm going to be voting for him. Even more people will vote for him. And if Trump did make this up, it was a genius play, because not only did it get him more publicity than probably the richest man in the world would have been able to pay for, it also positioned him in the hearts and minds of many as an anti-establishment radical again. As the anti-establishment candidate, this guy who the establishment are so terrified of that they're willing to arrest him and take away his rights pre-2024 to prevent him from standing again. Now, I don't know when the Republican primaries begin for the 2024 election, but I will say this. Trump obviously wants a massive, massive buzz about himself before those primaries begin. And this did create an incredible buzz. This created something that really, really was akin to, you know, campaign Trump. And we all loved campaign Trump, didn't we? You know, campaign Trump was fantastic. And this kind of reminded me of campaign Trump. This was Trump at his best, you know, being talked about everywhere, looking as if he was a true outsider from the mainstream, looking like he was the most hated man, you know, the establishment had ever hated. And yeah, people liked it. I actually was quite interested in it, but unfortunately nothing came of it. So I'm going to ask you, Patrick, did he make this up? Did he get tipped off genuinely? Did they withdraw from arresting him because of the response? Mm-hmm. Or is this just one big Trump publicity stunt?
Well, I think it's kind of a combination. It's not made up entirely of whole cloth, because you do have, specifically in this incident, he was saying he was going to be arrested by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and the Manhattan District Attorney has a grand jury that is looking into this Stormy Daniels hush money, which is really pretty much a nothing story. The FEC has already looked
into
it.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt you, because I do want answers, but sometimes you say things that prompt questions that I also need answers to. So, Donald Trump, let's just say Donald Trump has sex with a porn star that he finds attractive, and he doesn't want anyone to find out that he's had sex with his porn star that he finds attractive. Now, I'm sure there are many attractive women who have starred in pornographic movies. For my money, Stormy Daniels isn't one of them.
I know. I was going to say she doesn't fit the bill.
No, she's not particularly attractive. She's not one of these sort of early 20s, you know, babes that men would, you know, see walking around the swimming pool in their swimwear and think, oh my gosh, you know, I'd chop off my right arm to take her back to my hotel room. Stormy Daniels always seemed to me anyway a little bit sort of, I don't know, how can I say it, bit sort of like chunky and washed up. I've never really found her attractive. But let's say Trump did, and I don't know what, you know, Trump's preferences are. We're all different when it comes to the look of the women we like. Some like blondes, some like brunettes, some like, you know, skinny women, and some like more voluptuous women. So who knows what Trump's into? And I should imagine Trump's had so many that he's got quite a wide range of interests when it comes to the female form. But anyway, let's say he did fancy Stormy Daniels, and he did decide that he was going to sleep with her, and they had consensual sex, and there's no rumors that it was anything other than consensual sex. Why would it be an issue for a grand jury that a man who at the time didn't hold political office and wasn't actually in any position of power would have in any way had sexual liaisons with this woman? Why would that be something a grand jury would look into? And if he did pay her hush money, what would be against the law about using your own money to pay somebody, all legally, signed in front of, you know, attorneys or lawyers or whoever it was signed in front of, to keep their mouth shut? So you have sex with this woman,
yeah.
You know, you have your night of whatever you wanted to do with her, and afterwards you think, you know, my heart was beating quickly last night, but it wasn't sending blood to my brain. And unfortunately, I've made a little bit of an error of judgment, and this could be quite embarrassing for me. So you wake up, you say, do you fancy some breakfast? And you order breakfast in, and breakfast comes on one of those little silver platters. And when she, you know, lifts up a plate of eggs, underneath is a legal contract and a check for $250,000. And he says, look, I had a lot of fun, but don't really want to do it again. Don't want anyone to know about it. How do you fancy $250,000 for never saying anything? Now, okay. Why would that be illegal, or why would that be in the interests of a grand jury or a prosecutor?
Okay, so normally it would not be. So if Trump had done all this because he wanted to protect his marriage or business relationships or whatever, it would not be an issue. What the Manhattan district attorney, who's one of these George Soros children, what he is saying is that, no, it wasn't to protect his marriage or his overall reputation. It was to protect his campaign, and therefore it should have been listed in his campaign filings that he had made this payment on behalf of his campaign, and it wasn't in the campaign filings. Therefore, he broke the federal election laws.
Ah, I see where we're going with this. That immediately prompts a follow-up question then. And my follow-up question, before we've even properly answered this question, because this is just quite an educational situation here for me. So when did all this happen? Did Trump have sex with her during his campaign then? Or was this years before? Because I thought the Stormy Daniels things was a good few years before he ever thought about standing as president.
No, it was... I'll tell you when it allegedly happened, and Trump denies it happened, but I, you know, whatever. I don't particularly believe him. But although it is plausible because she is kind of gross, but it happened when Melania was pregnant with Barron. And so Barron was about, was he 10 years old or 12 years old when during the election? So it would have happened 10 or 12 years before the election.
That's absolutely. I mean, for anyone to even bring something like this before a grand jury is, in my humble opinion, an utter, utter abuse of power. Yeah, because I can tell you this, nobody is planning an election campaign.
Yeah, no, but the payment took place during the election campaign.
But the well, that changes things a little bit then, doesn't it?
Okay, anyway.
So he had the affair, allegedly, you know, well over a decade before. And then potentially she came to him, seeing that he was going to, you know, have a presidential run, and essentially tried to extort him.
Right, and the timing was her choice. The timing wasn't his choice. It's not as if she had been making these allegations publicly for 10 or 12 years. But she started making these allegations, and then Trump's Jewish lawyer paid her off using his own money. But I guess he expected that that was part of the job. I think the amount of money was around $100,000. And, so that's what happened. Anyway, so as far as that's what the district attorney in Manhattan was looking into. There's two other Soros children. There's the attorney general of New York who's looking into some business dealing. I'm not exactly sure what it is. And then there is the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, which is where Atlanta is. And she, I believe that's a black woman, and she's looking into, and so is the New York Attorney General, a hideous looking black woman. And, but this one in Georgia, because Donald Trump called and complained to the Secretary of State of Georgia, who runs the elections, that the elections were, fraudulent, that the gap between Donald Trump's votes and Biden's votes, or vote totals, official vote totals, was so narrow, and the various frauds were so large that it could have affected the outcome, and he wanted him to look into these allegations of fraud. Well, because Donald Trump made that phone call, the district attorney is looking into him for racketeering.
Well, I find this quite incredible. Although I do think you can sort of see what's happened here. Now, obviously, you said something which is of particular interest to me. And what the thing here you said is of particular interest is you said that it was Trump's Jewish attorney who paid for all of this out of his own pocket, potentially. And then Trump was expected to sort of repay him. And I'm going to ask you this, because I do think this is an important point to make. But what then is the issue if Trump didn't pay it? And is there the potential here that Trump's attorney did this to stitch Trump up?
Yeah, he's a very, very slimy lawyer. Why Trump had himself surrounded by so many slimy and questionable people... His whole shtick while he had the biggest TV show in America, the Intern?
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, okay. I'm sorry. I never watched it. but he would say you're he would say you're fired. And yet, judging from his administration, he had all these horrible people stabbing him in the back nonstop, and he couldn't say you're fired. So that, like, the whole show, that whole show was based on a fraud, because Trump doesn't say you're fired.
Indeed, he doesn't. And he probably should have done at some point or another. I mean, I look at all of this and I find it frustrating for two reasons. Firstly, I think for Trump to have potentially had sex behind his beautiful wife's back with a complete dog is disappointing, to say the least. And it's even more disappointing when you realise that his beautiful wife was pregnant with their wonderful, healthy, son. And this complete dog has probably done all sorts of things with all sorts of undesirable people and things you wouldn't even want to think about. So I'm not sure why you'd want to, you know, that's why you'd want to do that. It's sort of the equivalent of saying, well, this guy's offering to cook me this beautiful fillet steak, which is fresh and, you know, the meat is just, you know, aged and tender. And this other guy here is offering me a half-eaten, partially chewed, you know, two-week-old truck stop cheeseburger. You know, I'm not particularly sure why you'd go for the cheeseburger, especially not constantly. You know, I like a cheeseburger.
You have to wait for the filet mignon to be cooked.
Well, I've got to say this. I am partial to the old dirty cheeseburger, but I certainly wouldn't want my cheeseburger to be sort of partially nibbled or mauled.
That's the thing.
And you know, this cheeseburger was certainly not in prime condition, even for a cheeseburger. But, you know, when it comes down to it, that is disappointing. But I will say, I should imagine that there seems to be so many sort of layers of disappointment here. And the next layer of disappointment is Trump, despite having one of the most, if not, you know, well, I say one of the most, if not the most, full stop, you know, loyal and doggedly loyal, in fact, you know, support bases full of people who would have probably done more or less anything Trump had asked them for nothing. You know, why he employed people at great cost to himself who were anything but loyal, but were in fact disloyal dogs that let both him and his fan base down. I'll never get over that. I'll never understand why he would do such a thing. And this is another perfect example of a man who really, for all of his age, experience, wisdom and success, demonstrated time and again that he didn't really have a clue what he was doing. And that's a very disappointing thing, because you can imagine that anybody else who had partaken in, you know, drafting such an agreement or sorting something like that out would have done so with a great degree more discretion than this particular Jewish lawyer did. And yeah, Trump is a man that never fails to disappoint me.
Oh, well, anyway, there's more stuff going on. So let's just move on from Trump. There's all this stuff going on in France. Did we talk about it at all last week? What the heck's going on in France?
Well, what you're seeing at the moment is unprecedented discontent and, you know,
if it's France, it's not unprecedented.
No, actually, no, it's not. But it is pretty big, even for France. And this is all because Macron has decided to raise the pensioner age, the age of the age you have to be to gain your pension. And he hasn't done it democratically. It's not gone for a vote in Parliament. It's something that did used to have to go for a vote in Parliament, but he's pushed it through without any such vote, and people are going mental. And the interesting thing about this is, why is the age, the pensionable age, rising? Why are they pushing up the age when you can collect your pension in France? Well, it's because
Allah. free. Bringing back remembrance of the past and all the loved ones left behind. Farewell to thee, farewell.
Going mental. And the interesting thing about this is, why is the age, the pensionable age, rising? Why are they pushing up the age when you can collect your pension in France? Well, it's because, in my humble opinion, millions and millions of people have entered France from all over the world as migrants, asylum seekers, refugees, whatever you want to call them. And as these people have entered France, they have absolutely poured in. And they're a huge burden on the system. We know they're a burden on the system. You know, normal people know they're a burden on the system. And normal people know that the French taxpayer is going to have to work later and later into his or her life to provide for this swamping mass of migrants. And this is why the press are attacking these protesters. This is why the press, I mean, in the UK today, there was an article in the Daily Mail. This article was written by a guy called, let's see what his name is, 2 seconds. His name is Leo McKinstry, and he wrote Cocooned by State Support, the infantile demonstrators in France refuse to face economic reality of why Macron wants to raise the pension age. Well, I'll tell you this, when you think about it, that is one of the most insulting things you could say about these people. So what this hack journalist is saying is that fundamentally people of Europe, as in indigenous Europeans, you know, white people, should accept the fact they are going to have to work well into their pensionable age and extend their working life so that we can pay for our replacement. And if you don't accept such a thing, well, fundamentally, according to Leo McKinstry, you're infantile to want to retire at a reasonable age and claim your pension and live out your last days in some degree of comfort. That is now infantile. So the dream of working hard all your life, providing for your family, paying your taxes, then retiring to spend your days playing golf, enjoying yourself and visiting your grandchildren, that is now unattainable because we have to keep paying for these migrants. We have to keep funding our replacement. That, according to these politicians, is the single most important thing that Europeans can do. And when you look at that, I find that to be one of the most, if not the single most, insulting thing that could be said to European people. But, you know, the media here are doing what they always do, and they are running, you know, basically protection for the global elite who are replacing us.
Mm-hmm. Well, so there's obviously a lot of reasons for French people to be not particularly happy, and you've got the immigration, mass immigration, and then you've got the war in Ukraine, you've got the COVID stuff that everybody, and most of Europe, especially the larger and wealthier countries in Europe, all could make these same complaints. Everything's really, really messed up. Pensions, obviously people are in one way or another, they're funding their own replacement. And so I completely support the French freaking out. I do. And the French are good at freaking out. And they freak out in many ways. And sometimes you'll have French farmers slaughtering their sheep on highways or whatever, dumping out their milk in public places. They freak out in various weird ways. And of course, the whole yellow vest thing that seemed like such a big deal in the late in the last decade was over fuel prices. Not exactly what should be at the top of the list, but if they're going to freak out, let them freak out then. You're entirely correct that people are funding their own replacement. That on the one hand, you've got all these migrants entering the country, and the migrants tend to be younger. So the migrants aren't, so like the pensioner generation is going to be disproportionately white. The migrants, of course, their burden on the system is from having huge, big families, and the French have pronatalist policies that reward people for having families. And of course, the education system, the primary and secondary education systems are a massive expense in any society. And, I'm sure welfare utilization is also higher amongst immigrants. If it wasn't for the immigrants, you could say, well, okay, the retirement age of 60 years old was set back in such and such year when the life expectancy, like if you looked at the 1950 or so, the life expectancy in France for a man was about, you know, 64, 65 years of age, and woman was maybe 70. But now, and so, you know, setting the age of 65, people aren't going to be on the pensions that long. But now the average age life expectancy for a man is about 75 and for a woman's about 82, something like that.
Sweet Leilani, heavenly flower. Leilani, heavenly flower, I dreamed of paradise for two.
Leilani,
you are my paradise completed.
Leilani,
you are my dream. Leilani, heavenly flower, tropic skies are jealous as they shine.
My sweet Leilani,
I think they're jealous of your blue eyes.
Located in Traveler's Rest.
Oh, lovely Leylandia.
Jealous because you're mine. Sweet Leylandia. Heavenly flower.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
I dreamed of paradise completed.
Oh, lovely Leylandia.
You are my dream come true.
People aren't going to be on the pensions that long, but now the average age life expectancy for a man is about 75 and for a woman's about 82, something like that. So you could make the argument that, yeah, you need an adjustment. 60, people are living a lot longer now than they were when we set this age. You could make that argument, and I would agree with that argument, but in the context of the mass immigration, with all the things that you've mentioned, the things I've mentioned, even though these demonstrations aren't explicitly about immigration, I just support the French freaking out. That's my position.
Well, at the moment, I pretty much support anything that erodes the power of the anti-white state. I make no bones about that either. I'm not going to start apologizing for that. That's something that I fundamentally believe is a good thing. So if the French are out there and they are fighting back against the, the French government, you know, undermining Macron's credibility as the president, then I'm happy about that. In the same way that I'm happy when I see, Biden's, position being undermined. And I've already said that I welcome basically a time when, countries like America or Western nations are no longer top dog nations the world over. And that is because Macron, Biden, Rishi Sunak, and their predecessors are the people who have pushed this rampant anti-white policy. And as far as I'm concerned, the sooner they are, out of business, so to speak, the better it will be for white people. And unfortunately, some people will see that as sort of heretical to suggest that, any country but a Western country can be on top. And they will say things like, well, how would that be better for Western people if Western countries aren't on top? Well, Western countries being on top has actually been disastrous for mm-hmm. Western people. So as far as I'm concerned, when it comes down to it, I don't think things can get particularly worse. I don't think we're going to get to a position where things are, going to be worse. If China was the leading global superpower over America, how would that make things worse for Americans, white Americans? I don't think it would. I don't think it would in the slightest. In fact, I think if another country became the sort of preeminent superpower, that might actually make things better for white Americans, as people within the American establishment would feel extremely uncomfortable, and their lack of comfort may, I'm not saying will, but may lead to them rethinking some of their anti-white policies, as they may well need white people to attempt or to work with them in an attempt to regain their premier position. But at the moment, with America as the world sort of superpower, I don't think that is doing good things for white people. And I don't think it's doing good things for other countries that are traditionalist countries. So I would say America at the moment has one chief global export, and that is LGBT, progressive, lunacy, degeneracy, whatever you want to call it. And that isn't good for white people, but it's not good for, you know, it's not good for Arab nations either. It's not good for African nations. Wherever you see an American flag flying, alongside it, you see a pride flag, and that you know that America will be investing billions of dollars in destroying said other nation with those anti-family policies that America has destroyed itself with. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not too fussed if America ends up losing its position as a global superpower, because and if somebody was said to me, well, Mark, that, you know, that's kind of like heretical, you can't say such things, well, I would say in response to that, how would this make things worse for white people? And whenever we look at things, that's the key question, isn't it? How would this make it worse for our racial group? How would our racial group become worse off for this change taking place? I don't think it would.
Yeah, I think these are excellent points. I think the very first point you made is the one that people really need to take to heart. How is America's domination of the world, which has peaked in these past three decades, after the dismemberment of the Soviet Union, the breakup of the Soviet Union, with America being the sole superpower, how has your life been? How has it changed? Has it changed for the better or for the worse? And it's way for the worse. Did you ever see the what's it called, Murdoch cartoon episode where China invaded the United States? Did you ever see that?
Well, firstly, the answer to that question, no matter what that question was, but if the question started with, did you see the Murdoch episode, the answer was always going to be yes. But I certainly did see the one where they took over, the Chinese took over. And I found it funny because when the sort of white Americans eventually liberated America, I say liberated in inverted commas, liberated America from Chinese rule, the Murdochs, who had been living happily under Chinese rule, were much upset because they noted that they were quite enjoying the Chinese food. And for the first time in a long time, they were actually being treated like first class citizens, which...
Well, no, they were being treated by second class citizens. But it was so much better than
sixth-class
citizens, because they had been sixth-class citizens before.
Yeah, I remember it now. The Murdochs were walking around in traditional Chinese dress, and when they were liberated by Murdoch-chan, they were like, well, we kind of got used to this because it was nice. And she was like, why was it nice? And he was like, well, we were so used to being treated as this hated minority that being elevated to genuine second-class citizens was actually a nice change of pace. So, yeah, that's very true, very true. And I think that's how it would be. I genuinely believe that the Chinese would treat white Europeans better than the anti-whites in, you know, in the State Department, or, in Parliament here in the UK. You know, when you look at the way white people are treated in Britain, it's absolutely scandalous. I'm going to give you a very short example of how bad things are in Britain and how much hypocrisy there is. If tomorrow I went down the street and started advocating for White Businesses Day. Let's call it that. Let's call it White Businesses Day. And White Businesses Day was a day when white people, or others for that matter, had to knowingly discriminate against black and coloured businesses. So people had to spend all their money at white-owned shops. I could be arrested for that. I could actually be arrested for that under our race hate laws. And I would be, because I would be discriminating against people. But you actually see, British celebrities, black British celebrities, you know, campaigning for the Black Pound. And the Black Pound is a day when black people are meant to do exactly that, spend their money only with black-owned businesses and deprive white-owned businesses of custom. And you can see that the way these hypocritical laws are put on the books, you can advocate openly to ensure that white people... You can advocate openly, to ensure that white people are denied custom. But if you did the same to black people, there would be, serious repercussions for anyone who did that.
Mm. Well, just getting back to this issue of America no longer being number one and the international system being unstoppably, as far as I can see, unstoppably in a transition towards a multipolar system with the Russia-China axis as being at the center and China as being the most important country in that system. I'm fine with that. Obviously, I do these shows about once a week. I'll do a show on China, even though I'm not a China expert. I'm just trying to drive home this fact that it would be an improvement. You could look at the past 30 years. Has things gotten better for you? It's a little more complicated if you looked at the past five centuries, right? Because in the period of European dominance of the world, well, the Industrial Revolution took place. All sorts of things took place. And the life for people around the world has gotten much better as a result of European accomplishments. But at the same time, you can look at certain trends. And so, for instance, the European, half dozen or so European countries wound up at one point or another, controlling just about every, directly ruling just about every spot on Earth. There are a few places that never were under direct rule. They were under maybe indirect or rule. Japan was never formally a colony, although you could call it a satellite of the United States for the past 7 years. But was that a good idea? I mean, and even though, like, a lot of people will project Jewish power into the past and say, yeah, the world's always been under Jewish power and this and that. If you were to look at the scramble for Africa, colonizing Africa, how much Jewish power was involved in that? Maybe I'm wrong, but I'd say probably not that much. It wasn't that decisive. I think it probably... things like wanting to bring Christianity to the heathens might have been even more of a factor. Other things were factors, whatever. Certainly in the colonization of America, the Americas, spreading Christianity was one of the goals. But the main thing is, was it really worth colonizing Africa? What did we get out of colonizing Africa? And of course, that was positive. Because you can say a lot of what we're getting now out of the guilt from having been colonizers for a few decades in the early 20th centuries is infinity Africans coming to Europe, and we have to live with it because we were colonizers. So what do you make of that?
I would say that the only people who really benefited from any form of colonization was a small number of super rich elites who may or may not have been disproportionately Jewish. I don't know. May or may not. I couldn't tell you. I haven't looked into that. But one thing I can tell you is that fundamentally, the situation in Africa did not benefit normal people here in the UK. Normal people here in the UK didn't become rich, they didn't become wealthy, their lives weren't enriched, they weren't all being showered with diamonds and gold and all of the wonderful precious metals and jewels that came from Africa. They didn't really see any great change to their life. And it wasn't as modern day liberals or race baiters want to try and claim, that, you know, white people were sat here, you know, counting their money collectively as black people were enslaved and put to the sword and treated terribly in Africa and just generally, you know, exploited. That isn't what happened. And fundamentally, it seems to me no coincidence that the same weapons used against the African people by the liberal elite that colonized them, i.e. multiculturalism, and I can, if you wish, absolutely qualify that comment, are now being used here against us in our own countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want you to qualify it, the multiculturalism, for instance, in Africa. Or are you talking about bringing in Indians or
I'm talking about I'm talking about multiple things, and I will qualify it. If you look at maps of Africa and you look at where borders are drawn, you often hear the left say that the British or the Belgians or the French went into Africa and just drew arbitrary lines on maps and created nations as they saw fit. And that isn't strictly true. That's something that isn't strictly true, especially when it comes to the British. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, when the British went somewhere, the British looked at the ethnic makeup of the area they wanted to colonize. And rather than saying, look, here is a homogeneous indigenous tribe, let's draw boundaries around their territory and create a nation and we will rule over that, you know, homogeneous indigenous tribe, the British Empire would draw boundaries around several tribes, forcing them together into an artificially created nation. And that was done so that there were multiple indigenous people that could be played off against each other. Because if you had a small group of British diplomats, administrators, and a garrison of troops, they couldn't overcome a vast, vast number of Africans, especially not if the Africans were going to swamp them or charge them. You know, it would have been something they couldn't have done. So they looked at the situation and said to themselves, how are we going to deal with this? Well, if we make these nations multicultural nations, what's going to fundamentally happen is we can play the different ethnic groups off against one another, which is exactly what they did. So they would take these different tribes and, you know, one month they would give one tribe a big bonus or some extra money or a little patch of another tribe's land, and that would make the other tribes represent the favored tribe, and they would take it in turns playing favorites with these different groups to play them off against one another. And once they played them off against one another, they'd be so busy squabbling, fighting amongst each other, that they would never turn upon the small group of diplomats, administrators, and garrison of troops. And this held these nations in a series of multicultural strifes or conflicts that prevented the British tyranny being thrown off. Now, this was furthered, and I'll give you an example of where, in countries like Uganda, Burma was another place, where the British government actually imported other ethnic groups to create an artificial middle class. And that was done in Uganda with what were known as the Ugandan Asians, which were basically an Indian middle class bought from the Indian subcontinent to administrate on behalf of the British. And everyone who knows history will understand that the fate that met the Ugandan Asians was not a pleasant one, because when the British left, the Ugandan Asians were basically slaughtered, and they were slaughtered by Idi Amin, because they got the blame for being the new middle class, but for being the new group in charge of administration, in charge of the country, and obviously they wouldn't.
We're going to sing together, okay? Tiny bubble.
make me happy. Eat your hot lunch, make me feel fine. Tiny bubble, make me warm all over with a feeling that I'm gonna love you till the end of time. So here's to the golden moon, here's to the silver sea, but mostly here's a toast to you and me.
Repeat after me now, buddy.
Tiny bubble,
tiny bubble,
in the wine,
in the wine,
make me a happy,
make me happy,
make me feel a fine,
make me feel a fine.
Tiny bubble,
for being the new group in charge of administration, in charge of the country. And obviously they weren't indigenous, so they were attacked and, you know, many of them were murdered. And then many of the survivors actually fled to Britain. So the British Empire used multiculturalism as a weapon to divide and conquer these lands and to create a system whereby they could administrate over large numbers of people with very small numbers of troops and resources. And that is now being done here in the UK, but instead of it being done to indigenous African populations, it's being done to the indigenous population here in the UK. And it tells you something, because it's the same global elites doing this to indigenous Brits as were doing it to indigenous tribes in Africa.
Yeah, it really, really seems the same playbook, the divide and conquer. I remember my political science teacher 40 years ago explaining that and talking about Burma. He used Burma as an example, bringing in lots of Indians to administer there. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of other examples, and that seems to be the playbook. That's what's happening to us now. All right, well, we only have a couple minutes left, and there were a few other things that you mentioned that we could possibly talk about today. Is there anything else you'd like to bring in, the things going on in Wales or whatever?
Well, no, I'm just going to say that Patriotic Alternative had another fantastic weekend. We were out demonstrating in a Welsh village called Llantwit, and we held a protest in conjunction with local people to highlight the issues of mass immigration, as this area has been earmarked for a large number of migrants. They are going to be put up in hotels in the area, and it's going to be a completely swamping number of people, because when you go to these small Welsh villages, there aren't that many people present. In fact, quite the opposite. You know, these areas could be completely swamped and demographically altered almost overnight due to the amount of people being sent there. But one thing that was quite interesting, and I do think these things are really worth highlighting, because it tells you just how out of touch the media and the press are with normal people. The picture they used to illustrate our protests, and the media will have used this picture to make us look bad, is an elderly gentleman holding up a sign that read, "House the British, not the world." Well, I'm afraid the media really missed the point there, because I would suggest that that man with his sign probably was sharing a sentiment no different to what the average British person would say in their own home behind closed doors about issues like this, because that is how normal people think. And I do think this sort of shows, you know, the media up for what they are: absolutely out of touch, absolutely anti-white, and fundamentally, you know, they are completely endorsing our replacement. So, yeah, it was a good day, and I hope these protests continue all over the UK, because, you know, something has to happen, and if it doesn't happen soon, it'll be very, very hard to ever turn around the demographic changes that are taking place.
Well, thank you for doing that. Thank you on behalf of the, you know, white people everywhere, or even normal people everywhere, because what's happening is not normal. Okay, well, thanks for joining the show with me today, Mark.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to being back next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.